nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
We introduce you today's professor, Andrei Kolmakov, and he works on surface science, transport properties, and imaging techniques of nano objects related to gas sensing and catalysis. And he has authored many papers, about 70 book chapters and review articles, and he's very well known in the field of gas sensing. And he started his research as a staff member at the Russian Academy of Russian Research Center of Kurchatov Institute. And he completed his PhD there in 1996. And then he joined UCSB in 2005 in the physics department. And now he's an assistant professor at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. So we had been working with him for some time on gas sensing. So it's a very nice beautiful set of work. So I hope you'll enjoy it. Now, as you understand that the lecture will be videotaped, so please write down your questions or anything else that you have or comments so that you can ask him after the presentation. So, thanks.
Thank you, Ashraf, of you know, giving me nice words and also of having me here. So it's kind of honor to be here and in this famous university and present our results. So as you can see from the title, the title is Metal Oxide Nanowires Gas Sensing Elements. And from basic research to real-world applications, I will try to cover almost impossible the basic research of transport and surface properties of low-dimensional oxides and up to their final applications. And this actually, to do this in 45 minutes, it's a little bit a challenge, but I will try. So this is the scope of my talk. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 major lines. I will just briefly try to convince you what is actually interesting. The system is the metal oxide nanowires, why we care about them. And then I will give you a little bit of my vision of the field. It's a very subjective understanding of mine, how the field is evolving and where it's going. Then I will concentrate on a few fundamental properties of metal oxide nanowires, especially in their transport and electron hole transport and surface properties. And since these two things are very much related, coupled to each other, I mean surface and transport, so I call this ST entropy, and I will keep this kind of through entire talk. We will see how we can functionalize and improve the properties of surface properties of this kind of sensing elements, and look for alternative ways of changing their surface properties. Again, because of this coupling, these two things are very related, and this is a way in both sides. You can change their surface properties by a change of electronic properties of the device and vice versa. I will also talk about the new experimental techniques which we are trying to implement into this field. And the reason is why we're trying to do that is because the traditional ones are not working very well for these kind of nanostructures, and I will explain why. And then finally, I will consider two different... I actually talked a little bit about the experimental part, so how we do that and why we're doing these things in the way we're doing them. And then stay, you know, shortly on two different kind of prototype devices based on single nanowires and on nanowire mats. That's basically the scope of the talk. This is about motivation. So what I like behind the nanotechnology, it's this new kind of approach of building new things from the bottom. So with appearance of this bottom-up approach, where we are able to make sensing or any other kind of elements out of oxides, is going this kind of feature is going to really have an impact on many areas of our research and applications. It's going to impact medicine. It's going to impact catalysis, because the metal oxides either are a support of a catalyst or they are catalysts by themselves. Is going, of course, impact the optoelectronics, because many of them are transparent and very friendly to light. Microelectronics, and a lot of people are working on these transparent devices based on metal oxide nanostructures, and also sensorics. And this is basically a small part of this entire thing I will concentrate. And why we do think that metal oxide quasi-one-dimensional nanostructures are good. And here I actually kind of want to a little bit concentrate this. Quasi-1D means it's actually not exactly one-dimensional structures. We have to be realistic. Our structures are in the approximately size and diameter. It's about 100 nanometers on average. It means actually there is no really single one-dimensional thing. So, we call them quasi-1D because they do possess, you know, this huge aspect ratio, and it has some very useful features. That's about language. So another thing actually which makes quasi-1D nanostructures interesting, because they're new, needs to be studied, and actually we can rely on all data which we have from macroscopic oxides. You know, people collected a lot of data because of their sensing and catalyst properties and optical properties. So we can really rely a lot on the data already available. So it's easy to make a link to see what kind of dimensionality does with this kind of material. On top of these things, this metal oxide quasi-one-dimensional nanostructures, as usually one quasi-one-dimensional nanostructure, possesses this nice property, huge surface-to-bulk ratio. It means if you are shrinking the size of the nanostructure, the amount of atoms and molecules sitting on the surface of this oxide is going to be drastically increased with respect to the amount of atoms are sitting inside. It's immediately bringing you into their understanding that the surface properties of these oxides are probably going to be important. Another very important thing, it's so-called the biolens. And for those who is doing the semiconductor devices, this is basically a measure of how good your torque electronically with a bulk from the surface. So this is the biolens for these oxides. It's approximately, in our size domain, it's approximately equivalent to the radius of the nanostructure. It means actually, if these two numbers are comparable, it means that we have a nice electronic torque between the surface and the bulk. And that's actually what we're going to play with, and going to play with this a lot. Another very useful feature is many mean-free paths, for example, for electron holes and excitons, are also comparable or larger than the radius of the nanostructures. It means actually that, for example, if you are generating exciton inside a nanostructure, it's going to travel without basically annihilation or any kind of decay, just up to the surface. And while it's on the surface, it can do some job. And this is particularly important for applications like photoactivated or catalysis and things like that, photoactivated surface reactivity. So we can effectively do something with excitons or electrons and holes inside, which we generate inside the nanostructure, and do this job on the surface. Another thing, it can be easily manufactured as a single crystal. In fact, it's very much easier to make it single crystal rather than polycrystalline. And this has a certain, of course, advantages, because it's single crystals, it's very well faceted. We know everything about the geometrical and electronic structure, and we can nicely model the things. And therefore, we can use this as an element of the device which is easily calculable, and therefore predictable and stable. Because of this small size, but still having one dimension really extended in a microscopic world, so we can easily integrate these elements into available technology. And since it's small size, all our devices are going to be by nature low power consumption. Of course, you know, they are flexible, as you know. You can really complement these elements with the flexible platforms, you know, flexible electronics. They are transparent for visible light and have a very attractive optoelectronic properties. There is a size domain, actually, which is really very interesting, where many of these properties which I talked about even are not explored yet. So for a size domain, let's say in the range of 1-5 nanometers, where we have very little data, and therefore I will currently kind of will not do this so-called quantum confinement in kind of any kind of explanations, because we realistically haven't done these things yet, and these studies are just in progress. This is actually a zoo of nanostructures, one-dimensional nanostructures made of metal oxides. So far, since many groups are involved in growing them, there is very many classes of them. So most known classes are depicted here, from single kind of nanowires up to branched nanowires like these, nanospirals, nanostructures which possess internal structures inside itself, like a porosity, and nanostructures with modulated composition or modulated morphology. So all of these are basically currently on the market, and depending what kind of application you're searching for, you can pick up one of these and use it, and it can be done and proved. For gas sensing application, these nanostructures which I mark with the green on this plot already kind of have been used for gas sensor applications. This is actually my vision. I call it a research activity map of quasi one-dimensional oxides relevant to the chemical sensing. And there are three different lines of this kind of research. The investigation of their fundamental properties as a new gas sensing element, implementing new tools, and fabricating of new devices. I put the small bars here, which are partially filled, and this is a kind of, if you wish, my personal vision of the current status of this particular field. For example, this thing, for example, fabrication. So I do think that this research kind of already close to their normal pace of research, where the method is very well established, and basically there is a very little actually spaces left for really kind of completely new approaches. On another side, for example, we know very little about their interplay between the phase transitions and metal oxides with their surface properties. There are some, of course, works made on bulk, but nothing, as far as I know, made on low-dimensional oxides. And this is basically the status which I can see now. And I will talk today just a few of these things. I'll talk about the transport, I'll talk about a little bit of surface functionalization, about the interaction of the electrostatic field, if you wish, with the surface chemistry, and also an experimental part about the new microscopy and spectroscopy techniques, which are applicable to low-dimensional oxide, given their small size, and a little bit about the in situ and vivo measurements on these nanostructures and prototype devices, and also the fabrication of chemiresistors and the field effect transistors based on them, on the low-dimensional oxide. Let us start first with a little bit fundamental angle of view. So we'll talk about the interplay between the surface properties and electron hole transport inside the nanostructures. We'll talk about how we can actively tune the surface chemistry in such a way that we can really change the influence the transfer properties of the through the nanostructures and sensing properties, and basically do the reverse, whether we can change the surface chemistry by changing the electronic structure of the nanowires, and a little bit about the heat management inside these nano devices. This is a typical single nanowire chemiresistor. So basically, a resistor which changed its resistivity as a function of the gas exposure. And these are typical results made on this tin oxide nanowire. And what you can see here is a staircase that just temperature increases. And you can see with the temperature is increased, the background conduction of the sensor is increasing. And this is because it is a typical semiconductor, N-type semiconductor. And these small spikes here, it's admission of the certain gases. So for this plot, you have, I think, ammonia, as far as understood. For the red one is ammonia, and the blue one is responses to CO gas. And these are temperature steps. So we started with the 60, and that we're, permanently increasing in about 60, in a step of 60 degree, and we are measuring the sensitivity or responses to the different gases as usual. So what you can see here that the nanostructure is nearly inert to both of these gases at low temperature, so there is no any kind of surface chemistry taking place on their surface. And then when you're growing the temperature, you're basically achieving the point where the responses are rather high. And then eventually, as this kind of plot is showing to you, the responsiveness of the nanostructures to the different gases saturates, differently for different gas, but eventually saturates and even sometimes drop down. So there is an optimum region of operation for every kind of chemistry or any kind of gas, and this is because of the particularities of the surface chemistry of the particular analyte on the surface of this metal oxide. What you can say else with the temperature increase, you definitely can see the increase of the kinetics. So there, for example, at 180 degree Celsius, the kinetics is kind of slow. You have a slow increase of the signal and slow drop when the gas is taken away. And if at higher temperature, of course, as expected, the kinetics of the chemical reaction is increasing, and therefore the response is increasing in value and also in become fast in kinetics. So this is kind of usual thing which you can observe for typical nanowire chemiresistor, and people are usually considering four or three major parameters: in sensitivity, stability of the sensor, in selectivity, and very often response time is also crucial. And there are kind of secondary array of parameters which you want to also take into consideration. It's a temperature where the sensor is behaving in optimal way, type of the gas or class of the gas which the sensor is sensitive to, whether you want N or P type semiconductor. Sometimes you're stuck with a certain level of the power consumption, so you want to minimize the power consumption, or sometimes you want to increase the integration on your device, and therefore the size is crucial here. In most cases, these parameters are better for nanowire resistors than available, for example, thin films. Let me look on this. So sensitivity, it's basically the parameter of sensitivity of the sensor or electrical properties of the chemiresistor towards a certain concentration of the gases. So you can define in a different way. We will currently define on this as a difference of the resistor with respect to the background resistance as a function of the certain concentration of the gas. Stability, it's another important thing. It's how stable the sensor is during the long period of time. So, and this is very important because you want to keep it as stable as possible. Selectivity is how sensitive you are to the particular analyte, whether the sensor is sensitive to everything then it's basically not a good sensor, or the sensor has a kind of particular sensitivity to a certain class of analytes, and that's okay. Response time, as I already mentioned, it's how quickly the sensor responds. You don't want to make it very long, because otherwise it doesn't actually have a sense to detect something. This is a little bit about the basics, how we understand nanowire sensors are working. Let me just consider a single, a cylinder of the semiconductor. The size of the cylinder is comparable with the debye lens, or let's say with the depletion width of this particular semiconductor. So what's happening, and assume in the beginning that semiconductor is kind of pristine, there is nothing on the surface of this n-type semiconductor. So what happens if you would have the oxidation gas, which is acceptor gas, attaching to the surface of the semiconductor. If a ionosorption take place, adsorption event take place, so this this gas, oxidant, takes electron out of the nanostructures, and therefore the depletion region of the nanostructure become basically empty of electrons. In this particular case, you have a band bending, and this area become inaccessible for electrons. Basically, this area is currently removed out of the conducting. And entire conductance, if it exists in this nanostructure, will be confined within the narrow channel, which is the difference between the radius of the nanostructure and depletion widths. So we know how the depletion widths actually depends on the debye lens. This is a fundamental parameter of the semiconductor, and type and amount of adsorbides. So this band bending parameter. So in a usual kind of daily usual kind of operation conditions, it's approximately so this ratio is approximately 1, and you are dealing and depletion and the depletion width is approximately is equal to the debye lens. Sensitivity for this kind of sensor, therefore, is totally the function of this kind of interplay between the depletion width and the initial radius of the nanostructure. And it can be easily expressed in this kind of formula. Apparently, with a decreasing of the radius of the nanostructure, your sensitivity in these terms is going to increase. And basically, if your nanostructure is has the same radius as depletion width, it's basically going to infinity. So you're ultimately sensitive to everything. Of course, in reality, it doesn't happening because the conduction regime and basically entire electronics of this nanostructure is changing when you're going to have a radius below the debye lens or comparable with the debye lens. So you're basically then not having any more band bending picture. Your rather entire Fermi level start to move inside the band gap. So this kind of picture is not valid anymore, and you have to stick to a little bit different kind of the picture, which actually results that at certain levels the sensitivity saturates for very small nanostructures. The question is, of course, when and what kind of ultimate sensitivity you can get. But this is basically a function of the activity of the surface and the parameters of the semiconductor. So I will not concentrate here because we're not in this size domain. At least this talk will not be covering this size domain, and we will concentrate on a little bit larger nanostructures with this kind of size domain. This picture has been tested experimentally. So, for example, these are conductance of the same nanostructure exposed to different gases. You can see that when you're exposing to the acceptor gas, so when the conductance channel is shrinked, you have lower conductance, and if you're opening the conducting channel, exposing your nanostructure to the donor gas, so the conducting channel becomes wider, so your conductance is increasing. What is interesting here, and that's the confirmation of this kind of picture, the basically activation energy of conductance stays the same, which actually gives you a hint that basically nothing changed inside the core. So we had the same activation energy for conductance because we didn't change the conducting principle. It's just the radius or cross-section of the conducting channel was different. So what we can do with the surface chemistry? And the surface chemistry, as we can see from this example, you know, surface adsorption disruption events really can influence very sensitively our transport properties. So we call this interplay as a ST coupling or ST interplay, surface transport interplay. Usually people in catalysis, by the way, so they there is a very strong analogy between the surface chemistry of the gas sensor gas sensors and catalytic reactions in chemistry, because the way how their chemists want to improve their, for example, reaction rate is they just or selectivity of the chemical reaction, they add a specific catalyst which promotes the certain chemical reactions, and the reaction is going fast at lower temperature and very selective. So basically, the same game we're going to play with the gas sensors. We're going to dope the gas sensors with a specific catalytic particles in a hope to promote certain chemical reactions and therefore increase the yield and, or let's say, sensing, and increase the specificity of the sensor. In case of the biosensors, we basically can do the same game, you know, and that actually has been done, not by us, but some other groups, you know, they're functionalizing the surface with the specific enzymes and just were, which are very specific to certain kind of analytes, and these enzymes were serving as receptors for very specific things. Basically, the game was the same. Both of these pictures, adsorptions and disruptions event, influence the conductance through the nanostructure. So let me start with a classical thing. It's basically, palladium. Palladium is a well-known catalyst for example, for dissociation of hydrogen or oxygen on the surface of metal oxides, and it's very well-known catalyst. So we want here to a little bit to distinguish ourselves from catalytic society, because realistically, catalysts the chemists doing the catalysis are not really care about the conductance. And for us, conductance is very important because it's our instrument, how we monitor the chemical reactions. So therefore, we have to be a little bit and be careful here. So in this kind of experiments, we are distinguishing two different classes of possible influences of the catalyst on their transport properties of the nanodevice. One we call electronic, and another is chemical. The difference is the following. Electronic effect basically happening for every kind of metal which is deposited on the surface of the semiconductor. So the point is the following. If you have a different work function between the metal particle, could be catalytically active, could be not. But if there is any kind of difference in the work function between the nanostructure and the metal particle, then it's going to be a nano-Schottky barrier formed inside the nanostructure. For if you have a nanowire thin enough, then this local creation of the Schottky barrier, basically depleted area, is going to modulate the conductance through entire nanostructures. And therefore, this is going to be an influence. That we call electronic influence. Now, assume on top of this that this particle has an active catalytic performance. For example, it's able to actively dissociate the analyte and deliver this analyte into the surface of the nanostructure much more effectively than analyte would do this without the presence of catalyst. Then on top of this electrical, electronic actually action, we would have so-called chemical action, which is in chemistry is described in terms of so-called spillover and back spillover effect. Basically, if there is a chemical action on top of this kind of depletion region, we're able to create much larger area which actually depletes, for example, in this particular case of oxygen, the nanostructure, and therefore not only electronically, but also chemically influences the transport properties of the nanodevice. to explore the things very carefully and kind of avoid any kind of artifacts, we made a very specific kind of set of measurements. And the key point is that we basically were able to monitor the conductance of individual device through the individual nanostructure while depositing the catalytic particles in situ on the surface of their nanostructures. We made a special kind of the probe station just for that, which has multiple array of metal dosers inside, which are also very small one, not to heat up the entire system. So we made a lot of precautions to be free of artifact and to detect the things which are just relevant to the presence of metal particles. And after each stage of deposition, we were able to measure or test the sensing performance of this sensor. And let me just show you what's happening. So you have different stages here of metal deposition. So let's say very little in the left micrograph, an average one, and then a very massive deposition of catalytic metal, where the particles of nanoparticles of palladium, in this case, almost percolate to each other. So how their current behaves through the nanostructure just during this deposition effect. The first thing we notice is that the current is not stable, and instead of kind of common sense increase, which you're expecting while depositing metal on the any kind of surface, you're kind of expecting the conductance would increase. In our case, the conductance first was decreasing. And then actually when percolation started, the conduction increased in a normal way. But this initial decrease, which is not actually very much seen here, but it will be nicely seen if you, you know, zoom this area, this conduction decrease was totally in line with this concept, with the creation of the nanoShottky barriers under each particle and therefore shrinking the conducting channel of the nanostructure. And then finally, we start investigate different kind of metals and investigate the different performance of these metals on their in the, you know, as a sensor. So here is one of their examples. Nickel oxide and nickel basically form a p-type oxide on the surface of n-type oxide. This action we call purely or nearly purely electronical action. So this is just shrinking of the conducting channel. And what you can see here that indeed you increase the sensitivity up to a certain level, but this is not because of the chemical action of the nickel oxide, but it's most probably because of just shrinking of the conducting channel. Basically, what you are doing, you are from thick nanostructure or nanobelt, nanowire nanobelt, you're basically electronically make it thinner and thinner while depositing metal. And while you're doing the nanostructures smaller and smaller, therefore you're making it more and more sensitive to the analyte. So eventually when you're covering nearly, you know, significant part of the surface, you are going to basically destroy your sensor because the entire surface is covered relatively inert oxide and therefore it's not performing anymore as a sensor. In the case of palladium, we believe that we have chemical action. So in the case of palladium, so for example, this is a pristine performance, performance of the pristine nanostructures, and this is a performance of their nanostructure after the first doping, second doping, third doping of with palladium. And we have two different gases, oxygen, three gases, hydrogen, and CO in oxygen environment. This oxygen is placed here just to mimic the real world conditions. And what you can see here, this is a performance of the sensor before deposition, and this is progressively improving after the deposition of palladium. And as we expected also, the baseline is dropping because as we saw before, deposition of metal going to decrease the baseline for conductance. And this is just two plots on the left and right, a yellow one, and these are just zoomed area, I think here when it was pristine, and this one, which was basically this one. And you see the remarkable difference over the same the performance of the same nanostructure just because of the deposition of catalytic particles on the surface, both actually improving the signal yield and the response time as expected. So this was a kind of usual game which usually people in chemistry play. So they improve the surface chemistry with catalysis, and this is a kind of common. However, what about other means? What we can do else with nano device to, or differently, to improve the surface transfer interplay? And one of their ideas it comes out of their basically following consideration. So we have we know from chemistry of semiconductors basically that adsorption or desorption of analyte on the semiconductor surface depends on a relative position of the Fermi level and the molecular levels of the adsorbate. And therefore, while tuning the position of the Fermi level with respect to the level of donor or acceptor, you are able to make or to improve adsorption or desorption, or actually make it worse. So how we can control the Fermi level? Of course, you can control it by doping, by temperature, but in a so-called field effect transistors, FET devices, you can tune the Fermi level inside the semiconductor by electronic means, by gate potential. And if you are tuning there for the, this is actually a diagram, so if you have a nanostructure here as a conducting channel in a field effect transistor device, so we can, electrostatic field of the gate, we can basically tune the position of the Fermi level inside the band gap electronically. So whether it's going to play any role in the chemical reactivity, let me check it. So this is a nice set of data which actually proves that indeed it's possible. Here is a conductance through the nanostructures in the inert environment in nitrogen. Here is a drop of conductance where oxygen is added to the atmosphere and its conductance is dropping because, you know, oxygen is acceptor gas. So it depletes the tin oxide nanostructure. And here is a COO is added, which is basically produce CO2 while reacting with pre-adsorbed oxygen. So we have CO oxidation reaction. So this is kind of usual, you know, behavior of their tin oxide nanostructure being exposed to oxidant or reducing gas. So what happens with the gate? So if we go to the very negative gate, with a very negative gate, what we see that basically adsorptivity, so if you look on the thing, that the signal which belongs to the oxygen adsorption, which is proportional to the oxygen adsorption, is decreasing, and actually up to the zero. It means actually at the certain negative potential, there is no more oxygen adsorption, ion adsorption on the surface. Basically, we electronically quit the surface chemistry at that point for oxygen. Let me look on the second component of the reaction, what happens with CO2. Even if there is no any kind of oxygen, newly coming oxygen from the gas, we still have certain reactivity of CO. And that actually it means that there is something still on the surface, we don't know exactly what, or which actually reacts with the CO and produce CO2. This part of the reaction, of course, is increasing with increasing of the gate potential to the positive side, because while promoting the adsorption of oxygen on the surface, we are therefore promoting the rate of this reaction. So basically what it tells to you, this picture tells to you that first of all, you can tune the Fermi level position electronically, and by this you can promote the chemical reactivity of the nanostructure towards the, you know, reducing or oxidating gas. And in addition to that, you basically electronically can select the reaction channel, because if you stay here, you are basically promoting one channel of reaction with let's call oxygen X with a CO. And while increasing this positive gate, you are promoting the usual reaction channel, which is an interaction of COO with a pre-adsorb atomic oxygen. So selectivity and yield of the reaction can be changed. So a little bit about the heat management of these nanoresistors. As you know from a classical Joel picture, if you are running the current through the wire is going to be warm, even hot. So nanowire is basically the same structure. While you are running the current through the stuff, you are going to influence the temperature. For some time, it was kind of ignored thing, but in the gas sensing, this is a crucial thing because the surface chemistry crucially depends on the temperature of the nanostructure. Therefore, the heat management and therefore basically your measurement can influence the performance of the device itself. To test this idea, we made a few kind of idealistic structures. First of all, you have to decouple the nanostructure from the substrate. And also you want to have it as long as possible to because there are a few channels where the heat can go away from the nanostructure. It can go to the air. It can go to the substrate. You can go to the leads. And all of these channels, if you want to kind of monitor this effect, you have to minimize this thing. And we did it using the micro-hot plates because they're, our nanostructures are long and they're, and this is actually micro-hot plates from NIST. And their distance is 9 microns. So when you place our structure here, it's basically hanging over the surface of the silicon oxide. Or you can actually use micro-machined, in this case it was micro-machined glass with grooves, and you can actually put the thing onto the top of the metallized walls, and therefore there is a minimum kind of the temperature release to any kind of possible places here. And also here it can be done very, very long, more than 100 microns. So there you're also effectively canceling the heat dissipation towards the leads. With this kind of structures in hand, so let me see what we can observe. This is a sensing performance. This is a response of the nanostructure to the hydrogen in an oxygen environment, basically hydrogen oxidation reaction, taking kind of the same gas conditions. So we made these things not in air, but in vacuum. It's kind of moderate vacuum to decrease actually heat dissipation into the atmosphere to have an effect. So this actually performance of this sensor at room temperature, that's actually an important thing, at room temperature, no any external heaters, as a function of the bias. And what we can see while increasing the bias, so the current through their nano device, we're suddenly getting their sensor. So the sensor starts to operate. It means actually that we are warming up our device by Joule heat to the significant temperatures, approximately 100 degree, 150 degree, can do the sensor in this way. So it has basically two things. First of all, you can consider it as a parasitic effect since you have a factor which is not easily controlled. But you can consider the things also as a very positive effect because using the sensor at room temperature, so you don't need any kind of external heater, you're basically having in your possession the gas sensor which is able to operate with a minimum power consumption. So our estimates show that basically with this kind of sizes we have, we can go as low as a microwatt to have operational sensor. Okay, this was about kind of effects which can influence their GAN sensor. So what about the experimental tools? Why do we need this thing? First of all, what actually we did? We do need a precise knowledge about the surface chemistry of these low-dimensional oxides. We have to know that the chemistry is the same or different with respect to their other macroscopic oxides. So we want to test this. Also, we want to see fine interplay between the surface chemistry and the transport properties. And we for that, we need kind of analytical tools. Unfortunately, the situation is complicated by the fact that many properties of low-dimensional nanostructures are size-dependent. And therefore, if you're analyzing the big mat, or let's say film, of these nanostructures, you're basically getting the average, very average information, which is really become unspecific. To avoid these things and to be kind of really, you know, precise in your fundamental studies, you have to operate with the individual nanostructures. And this is a challenge because most of the traditional surface science techniques, like XPS, for example, Auger spectroscopy, LEED, whatever you can imagine, unfortunately do not work in this size domain. So they are macroscopic. So you have to implement something. As for the traditional microscopic techniques, which have analytical possibility, like, for example, electron yield spectroscopy coupled with a transmission electron microscope, unfortunately, it has, of course, great value, and you know, enormous progress has been done recently of measuring the, you know, this kind of things on nanostructures. Unfortunately, for reducible oxides, the damage which this strong electron beam does on the nanostructure is sometimes intolerable. These are just a few pictures here on the left. You have a micrograph with a palladium deposits on the surface of the nanowire of tin oxide. And just sequential imaging, few shots under the electron beam indicates how the nanostructure is degrading under the beam. So the beam is heavily reducing, warming up this nanostructure, and basically destroy it. So while basically operating or imaging these things, you are destroying the thing. It's not a good approach. And this is sometimes it's also not the case for strong kind of high-energy electron beam coming from TEM. It also can be observed in SEM. Look on this test. We just took a usual nanodevice, a chemiresistor, and stayed for a short period of time just in the middle of this device and see what's actually happening with transport through the nanostructure. And what we saw that the current through the nanostructure is dropping as a function of time, as a function of exposure. And it's clear why, because actually the beam is locally reducing their metal oxide nanostructure and eventually, from point of view of semiconductor, creating kind of the PN, or let's say NN plus junctions here, which actually interrupt or influence the transport through the nanostructure. And to prove this, that we do have this kind of defect, we imaged their surface. This work has been done in collaboration with Oak Ridge National Lab, with Sergei Kalinin's group. And this is actually a topology image, AFM image of the nanostructure with a defect in the center. And this is an image made with a scanning surface potential microscopy. So basically, if you wish, local Kelvin probe, which indicates the presence of the electroactive element here, just in the center. And this is actually done under the biasing condition. So we do have, we don't see any defect in topology. So there is no kind of interruption or anything, you know, morphologically happened with the nanostructure. It's electronical modification here. This is electronic defect, not morphology defect. So bottom line, while imaging, you're already able to destroy the device. That's kind of a precaution you have to be, you know, aware of. What about the less destructive techniques? Very recently, we were lucky to collaborate with Ulrike Diebold's group from Tulane University, and she is basically an expert. Her group is an expert in surface oxides and STM studies. And we kind of developed methodology how we can image this oxides with STM. It was kind of the joint effort. We are able to get, for the first time probably, atomic resolution on nanobelts and individual nanobelts. And this is how the real surface looks like, so of the nanobelt. First of all, you see that we presume that a single crystal surface, apparently it's single crystal, but it has a terraces on the surface. It's basically pretty much reminds what the surface of the usual single crystal. And on atomic level, it's also kind of usual in this sense. So we have a usual surface 101 facet for nanobelt, basically the same what was seen in high-resolution TM studies. These measurements have been become possible because we're using extremely kind of a lot of precautions to make this nanostructure, to keep them clean and to make them clean. So I will talk about that a little bit later. So except to the STM, how we can basically get a little bit more analytical information out of these individual nanostructures? And the help comes out of the kind of unexpected field. I don't know how many of you are aware about the synchrotron radiation, but this is extremely powerful tool. Synchrotron radiation studies and the synchrotron radiation instrumentation become developed so much that now currently we're able not only to measure the, let's say, to measure the microscopic samples and measure it at a very high level of accuracy, I mean the chemical composition, that the chemical status of the even the molecules on the surface, but now we can do the same class of measurements on nanoscopic objects. And there are a few instruments which we started to use in our collaborators, and this work has been done in collaboration with Elettra, the synchrotron radiation facility in Italy, in Trieste. So they have a few beam lines, which one of them is installed a so-called PIMLIM microscope. It's a photoelectron emission microscope with the capability of electron low energy electron microscope. It's basically the same machine. And the second microscope is SPM, it's called scanning photoelectron microscope, and I will talk about this in a minute. So with a PIM instrument, it's basically a system of electrostatic lenses which are designed in such a way that they image very little area of the sample. The field of view can be as low as 2 microns. And the current resolution we were able to get with this kind of instrument, it's kind of already in a nanoscale. It's 15 and 14 nanometers for LIM and XPIM in particular. And the PIM microscope is working in the following way. You are exciting the area with the light from the synchrotron radiation, the photoelectron emit into space, and with this very well-focused and very nicely tuned electrostatic lenses, you're imaging this area in photoelectrons. And you can get image, you can see the different yield, and you also can tune the threshold or energy of the synchrotron radiation to tune to particular absorption edge of the material, and therefore to stress a certain chemical contrast on your surface. And I'll just show you a few examples. This is a LIM images. With LIM microscope, it's basically embedded LIM microscope, low electron energy microscope. It's operated in a little bit different way. It's combined machine with a PIM, but it's actually uses electron for excitation and for imaging. Excitation of energy of electrons are very, very low, no destructive at all. And you can get images in this kind of microscope. And what is important, you can also get the diffraction pattern from local areas of these nanostructures. So we implement these two techniques for individual nanostructures. This is a tin oxide nanobelts. And what is nice behind this thing, not only are you able to image these things, you also can get surface structure. So, and this is a very surface sensitive machine. So you can follow the evolution of the lead pattern, for example, through entire lens of the nanostructure to see, for example, the integrity of the surface of the nanostructure. With a PIM instrument on top of that, you can use, as I said already, you can, for example, tune your analyzing energy to, let's say, to these electrons from this area. You just specifically select this area and start to look on the yield as a function of the excitation light. And while changing the excitation light in the proximity of adsorption edges, you can make a fine so-called Xanis spectroscopy around the thresholds. And this will give you information about the chemical composition and the chemical status of near surface layers of your nanostructure. So this level this is actually basically state of the art of performance of these machines in application to this particular very, very small objects. And these are a few examples with the PIM again, tuning the different energy of their light. You can stress, underline certain features. For example, this indium oxide nanowires with an indium catalyst on the end. And you can see that in this energy, you basically just see the topological contrast of this nanowires on the surface of the silicon. And here, while tuning there just above the work function of the indium, you will see these bright spots, which actually kind of indicate these are metallic pieces. Of course, you have to overcome a lot of experimental difficulties. You have to create a special substrates to be to avoid the charging and things like that. But this, all of this actually kind of can be overcome and can be done. Another example is a completely different kind of microscope, which is based on synchrotron radiation. It's more or less like electron beam microscope, usual SEM. However, instead of the scanning electron beam, you can scan the synchrotron radiation beam. So you can scan soft X-rays and can actually focus on a very, very thin spot. Currently, the resolution is close to 100 nanometers, and therefore you can image this structures easily. And this is an example. These are again nanobelts of tin oxide, and there one of these nanobelts is pristine. This kind of green one is pristine, and this bluish one has a certain patches of palladium patches, palladium deposit on the surface. And you can see that how these covered areas have a completely different contrast, and therefore basically, not only you can measure the spectroscopy on every local point of this thing, very precise spectroscopy, XPS spectroscopy on these points, you can also get maps, chemical imaging of these objects. You can even judge about their state of your oxide. This is a pristine nanowire. Unfortunately, you can barely see it here because this actually image was done by subtracting the signal from one channel of the analyzer to another one. But bottom line of this image is the following. Every peak in XPS could have a different contributions. In this particular case, this peak in higher energy part here has is a feature of reducible oxide, and the left feature is a feature of a normal oxide. And looking on this kind of imaging and having this kind of spectroscopic information, you can basically check what kind of level of oxide or of doping you have along your nanostructure. Again, on top of that, you can look how the transport is electron transport proceeds through the nanostructure. Through your nanostructure. Here, for example, the map of the electronic of potential of electrostatic potential through the nanowire network. So this is randomly oriented nanowire mats randomly placed between the two electrodes. And while biasing one of these electrodes using this kind of spectroscopy, you can follow the potential distribution. And depending on the bias, you can actually tune and change it. And for example, this imaging show you that modulating this bias, you can define the hot spots of the transport. So these points of the network where the transport is interrupted by the contact resistance. So not only spectroscopy is possible, but also their transport measurements. In addition to this kind of very fancy studies, they're not that common. Every of you who has a scanning electron microscope or atomic force microscope can implement a lot of possible modes of operation which are available for this kind of spectroscopies, microscopies. So, for example, in AFM, you can do impedance microscopy, you can do a Kelvin probe microscopy. And in traditional SEM, for example, you can, instead of the monitoring the secondary electrons or luminescence, you can monitor the current through the nanostructure. This is a very old method, invented probably in the 60s, but not used so far so much for nanostructures, but it appears to be almost ideal. The way how it works is the following. Instead of the monitoring the secondary electrons, with your microscope, you just hook up the current, the electrode, you are connecting your electrode to the current meter, and you are monitoring this current meter as a function of the rastering of electron beam. And electron beam creates electron hole pairs inside the nanostructures, and basically you are monitoring how current flows through the nanostructure. And this is an image. So we are collecting the current here, and usual SEM image doesn't show anything here, right? So that's just usual nanostructure. And this image showed that in this and this point, there is something which is interrupting the transport. So transport is hampered here, and it doesn't flow. And then from this point, it's actually start to flow okay, freely. So with this method, you can analyze the electrical status of your device. With a small implementation in your SEM microscope, you can even image the things in air or in liquids. And that's, again, an example of a nanowires immersed either in air or in liquid. And the point is that you can currently buy and kind of modify available high-pressure cells, which are available on the market, place your nanowires there, and you can measure the things in liquids, and you can measure the things in real air. And even more, you can basically make some kind of modification of the structures. Here, for example, we decorated the nanostructures with metals just by illuminating illuminating the nanostructure of titania in liquid with electron beam, and depositing the metal out of solution onto the surface of the nanostructure. It's basically, it's kind of analog for photocatalytic reaction, which is in air. What about their real world applications? Here we have basically tested two different concepts of devices. One concept is based on individual devices, on individual nanowires. However, the usual nanowire, sometimes it's not the best object or not optimal object to use. And the reason why it's not very often a good one, because sometimes the sizes of structures are in, 200-500 nanometers, which is not really that good. So how we can, how we actually can use this kind of structures, these relatively big structures, for our gas sensing performance, where we do need the smallest and narrowest parts. And the trick was the following. You can grow these big nanostructures, but you can modulate their growth by, for example, by pressure change. And if you are interrupting their growth, the nanostructure tunes itself in such a way that you are able to produce oscillating thick and thin parts. And you can do it, what is amazingly, you can do it in a programmable way. So you can basically grow your one-dimensional nanostructures just writing the computer code. It's kind of the Morse alphabet. Basically, you are producing these kind of things, and the nanostructures follows your message. You can write the messages along the length of the nanostructures. And here, actually, there are a few examples. This is a message, 10, 3, 20, and there is a message is 80, 60, and 24. And this is basically interruptions of the reflux of their argon inside the oven, computer controlled, using the valve, which is computer controlled. So that's a very interesting thing. And the point is, this is extremely useful for gas sensing, because in this kind of nanostructure, the sensor performance is defined by the very narrow part, while another thicker part can be used for everything, for stability, for contacts, in much more relaxed conditions. In the same way, you can change the doping level, of course. You know, not only morphology can be changed, but also the doping level. And these are a few examples where how modulation of their growth conditions can produce the modulations of their chemical composition of the nanostructure. These small deposits, it's excess of material which was released out of the nanostructure to the surface and formed the self-organized dots. And basically, the position of these dots can also be computer controlled. This is the way how we're doing our sensors. We, again, don't use any kind of wet methods. And we're using this by purpose because every kind of wet procedure is going to introduce a kind of contaminants on the surface, which is kind of difficult to get rid of. And therefore, we develop kind of methodology which is completely dry and doesn't use any kind of photolithography, any kind of resists. Everything is done from high temperature and in vacuum conditions. We are, to make electrodes and to make our devices, we are just, making the physical vapor deposition in vacuum through the shadow mask. So that's our usual approach. And as I said, there are two different kind of devices you can work with: individual nanowires as a chemiresistors, or much cheaper approach where the nanowire networks can be used as a sensing elements. They have a little bit of difference in their performance in the sense of principles behind their the electron transport. In the single nanowire device, the transport is defined by this core shell oscillations, while in the case of the network, it's basically percolating transport. But performance is basically comparable, and you can get as good MATS and the sensing performance as a respect to the in comparison with individual nanowires. And this is example. Again, this work has been done in collaboration with NIST using their micro hot plates with Dr. Meyer and Steve Simanchik. And here is just regular performance, nothing particular. We didn't optimize anything. And this is sensitivity performance to the ammonia in air. And you can see that we can easily go to the sub-ppm level with no optimization, with no any catalyst. And the micro-hot plate give you another extra option. With a micro-hot plate, you can easily change the temperature of the device because it's basically micro-machined membrane, very thermally decoupled from surroundings. Therefore, the temperature change of this heater beneath the nanowire can be changed fast. And using this option, you can also change you can actually tune selectivity of the device because the temperature ramping and will be since because the reactivity of the nano device of the nanostructure to different gases is temperature dependent, the profile of the response towards the different gases under the same temperature ramp will be different, and you can use it for specificity. Another concept is a multi-electrode device based on nanowire MATS. It's a second prototype which we're exploring. And the idea behind this device was to make electronic nose system. And the idea is very simple, that instead of the single sensor, we have many, many sensors here, basically 39 sensors made as an array. And every sensor here is a little bit different from neighbor. And this little bit of difference produces your required specificity to not only to detect the gases, but also to distinguish between them. There is a special mathematical algorithms which analyze the signals from individual sensing elements here and make kind of the three-dimensional, multidimensional picture out of that. And every gas has a specific pattern in this multidimensional, let's say, odor map. And based on this kind of very, very simple device, you can basically say not only to sensitively monitor the gases, but you also can sensitively distinguish between the different gases. So you basically got certain degree artificial olfactory system. This is a summary of my talk, that a lot of things needs to be done still from point of view of fundamental studies. So we do need to explore surface bulk interplay or surface transport interplay if we want to really address the properties of these nanostructures in a feasible way. Our understanding is still limited because of the lack of well-developed technologies and methodologies, and for that we need keep keep proving keep understanding and keep implementing the spectrum microscopy tools, especially kind of like this spectrum microscopy approach, which is offered by synchrotron radiation facilities. And and another thing which I want to actually to underline that the device is getting smaller and smaller, and therefore, in particular in sensors, while you are getting smaller, unfortunately or fortunately, other parts of the device start to influence the performance of the device itself and of the sensing element itself. And therefore, to a certain degree, when you're getting smaller and smaller, you are not able really to decouple the performance of the sensing element with the rest of the device. And therefore, these kind of studies, which I was showing, they have to be done in an assembly, in the device itself. And then you will get the whole picture. And another thing which I wanted to measure, it's not necessarily true that smaller you are, more sensitive you are. From point of view of detection ability, yes, the smaller sensing element, the most probably smaller, the smaller their the smaller the detection limit it could have. However, if you look on this picture, sometimes the molecule just have very hard time to find a very small sensor. And in principle, in spite of the fact that this small sensor can be extremely sensitive, the molecule just cannot find it. And if it cannot find it because it's that small, there is no sense to have it so sensitive. So there is kind of trade-off between these kind of sensors. And therefore, what is required in the future, if you do really need to detect very low concentrations, like, for example, explosives, you better kind of come up not only with a very sensitive sensor, but you also have to think about the morphology of the sensor. Sensor has to be, small, but from point of view of detection, so it has to be sensitive, but it has to be macroscopic. From point of view of, let's say, sampling, it has to be able to absorb as much possible analyte as possible. And of course, we have to think about the probably new transduction principles. So this kind of linear principles, which we were talking about, it's probably not going to be improved anymore. They're kind of on limit. So we have to think about the new concepts, how we can produce more sensitive sensor. For example, the sensors which are pre-triggered, which are probed ready to have a strong signal upon excitation by a very minor, let's say, absorption effect. For example, analog in devices is avalanche diode, which is very sensitive because the conditions of the diode are such that it's already kind of ready to produce avalanche. Something like that we need in gas sensorics. So thank you for your attention. And I also would like to acknowledge the work of my members of my group and my collaborators and co-workers from different universities. Thank you again for your attention. I also apologize for kind of long talk. Yes, according to their measurements, they have something like 10 to 17, 10 to 18 dopants per cubic centimeter.
Why does the conductivity increase so quickly with temperature?
I think it's because there the level where the dopants are, they are not that shallow. That's why it's so steep.
So you're activating the donor activation.
Yeah, we're activating the donor, and the donor is not that shallow.
These are large band gap materials.
And these are large band gap materials of approximately 3.6 electron volts. It's not like silicon.
So all the surface studies that you did, what does it translate to in terms of devices? Are there generic suggestions that people are doing certain things wrong?
No, I don't want to say that anything is going to be wrong. I just want to say that what you can get out of these new techniques. From these new techniques, you're going to get few things. For example, you would like to understand what's going on from point of view of surface chemistry, how your nanostructure reacts with the environment, what is exactly the sequence of events, what are precursors on your surface, how do they change with time? How do they change with temperature? So what's basically the surface chemistry is? So there is no other tool like this. So the point is, if you start doing this thing on MUTs, on macroscopic samples, everything will be smoothed out. All the particularities, for example, dependent on size or facets, will be gone. In an individual device, you can monitor this as a function of size, as a function of the facet, the surface chemistry, and you can monitor it in a kind of individual level and on operating device. Three at once, because again, the chemistry depends how you wire a device. It can be, I hope I show the same. And I don't want to say that everything could be changed. Very well possible that surface chemistry proceeds in the very same way as it does on macroscopic world. But realistically, we don't know yet. We don't know that. So this is just the development of methodology. If you see that we're just still on the stage of probing the technique, we're not on the stage of giving you data. It's just a proof of concept because it's new instrumentation, new approach to device physics, chemistry, if you wish. And on top of this, as I said, not only that you're able to show their, let's say, how chemistry is evolving on the surfaces, you also can show and monitor how transport is changing as a function of the biasing, as a function of the gate potential, as a function of the adsorbite. And as I saw in these kind of pictures, unfortunately didn't talk of them too much because of lack of time, a lot of things going on in the nanowire devices. We have, for example, very often we have unexpectedly electrically active defects in the electrodes areas or just in the middle of the nanostructures. And we don't know why they're probably grain boundary, probably something else. And this can be monitored by, SPM or gate electrode by itself, gate oxide itself is an issue. So very often you have a charge stored on the gate oxide, and this charge which is stored on the gate oxide and which is changeable, by the way, because of the gate potential, can influence back the performance of your device. Look on this picture. This is again, scanning surface potential microscopy done in collaboration with Kalinin's group. So what we have here, this is the charge distribution around the biased nanowire as a function of time. First scan, third scan, second, third, fifth. And you can see this hollow, which is spreading out. This is basically hydroxyl groups, as we think. So basically iron component on the surface of the gate oxide spreading away. And it's clear that this guy is going to influence back the conductance of your device. That's why I'm saying that you cannot really decouple your device performance from the rest of the device. It's too much idealization because it's getting small and extremely sensitive to surroundings.
there are no more questions, let's thank the speaker one more time.
Thank you for your attention.